there was another reflection as well. Ray Shackelford was in the center of the room, legs sprawled on the floor, head tilted back, and mouth lifelessly open, torso slowly rocking, unsupported at an impossible angle, as if he were held up with wires. I turned to face the center of the dance floor. He was not unsupported at all. Vampires just didn't cast reflections. His wife held him, cradled in her arms. She was in human form again, squatting, with her naked back toward me. She was feeding from Ray's neck. She stopped drinking when the beam struck her. Susan lifted her dripping face and kissed her husband tenderly on the forehead, leaving a crimson lip imprint before letting him drop limply to the ground. She looked at me and smiled. Her eyes reflected the light like a cat. She licked the blood from her lips.
"We have some unfinished business, you and I."
She wiped her forearm across her face and smeared blood down her bare chest. She strode wantonly toward me. I was terrified. I snapped Abomination to my shoulder, aimed at Ray's brain cage, and squeezed the trigger. It might have been murder, but the fate of the world was at stake. Nothing happened. I could feel the texture of the metal beneath the joint of my finger, but it wouldn't respond. I concentrated, but I could not force myself to pull the trigger. My hand would not respond to my brain. I could feel her presence, boring into me, her iron will testing itself against mine. She walked right into the gun, putting the muzzle directly between her breasts and over her heart. I could not fire. My body was frozen. I could not even move.
"You are a strong one," she told me. "But your human will is no match for mine."
She dragged one fingernail under my eye, opening the skin and spilling blood down my cheek. A black presence pushed against my conscious mind, probing it violently, relentlessly.
"Tell me, how did you hurt me? How did you burn me? Nothing can inflict pain upon a master, but that did."
I tried to speak through rigidly clenched jaws. I fought a battle inside my skull, a fiercer fight than anything I had ever experienced before, a struggle for the very control of my body. The black weight pressed down hard, and unfortunately for me, this was an unfamiliar battleground.
"Tell me your secret, Hunter. Tell me, and I will give you a gift. I can see it in your mind. The very thing that you desire most."
She smiled seductively.
"Let go of your secrets. Join me, and I will give you my daughter. She can be yours forever."
The blackness encroached into my vision. I could feel the tendrils of her power crawling deep into my mind, and I was powerless to stop it. I did not know how to defeat something with no physical body. Pain began to emanate from my skull, rippling down my paralyzed spine and searing every nerve in agony. I fought on. I did not know how, but I knew that I fought.
"I just have to say, Hunter, you have the strongest will of any mortal I have ever encountered. You'll make a good servant for Lord Mashado."
I watched in horror as her razor fangs extended. I knew what was going to come next. She would rip me open and drain my blood. Either she would let me just die to rise again as a near mindless undead, or she would open her own veins and force me to partake of her blood, and I would become a horrible beast in her image. I despaired, but I fought on.
"Boy,"
Let me help.
I heard the comforting voice of the old man. Suddenly I had hope. Something else joined my internal struggle. Another presence took up the fight. The blackness paused, and was then overwhelmed and pushed aside. I gasped in relief as my muscles unlocked. Susan stopped, her teeth hovering centimeters from my throat.
How?
Abomination cut her off as a solid ounce of silver exploded through her black heart. She stumbled in surprise. I felt the old man's presence leave my body to continue his assault against her mind.
You want my secrets?
Boom. Boom. I shot her twice through the face.
You really want to know?
Boom. Boom. I shot her in the throat and chin.
There is no secret.
Boom. A slug pierced through her brain, rocking her back.
I just hate monsters!
Click. I released the silver bayonet. It locked into place with a snap.
So go to hell.
I slammed the broad blade through her torso and released the shotgun as I reached for my knife.
And die! Thwack.
The Ganga Ram's blade embedded halfway through her throat, lodging against her hardened spine. Black fluids and fresh red blood geysered forth.
You evil bitch!
I wrenched the big blade violently free. She grabbed my shotgun and pulled the blade out. Abomination was still slung to my body. She swung it around, and I was dragged along. I was launched hard across the dance floor. I crashed and skidded, coming to a stop next to Ray Shackelford. The big red lip prints on his forehead would have looked silly if our situation had not been so deadly serious. Susan twisted her head around as her wounds closed. I had not even slowed her down. She changed right before my eyes, lengthening, thickening, twisting into the gray killing machine that we had seen upstairs. Her brown eyes, so like Julie's, filled with blood and turned into red pools of hate. I could feel the old man's presence in the room with us, but after his initial surprise, he had nothing to offer against this creature. I got to my knees as I pulled my STI and placed the .45 against Ray's temple. He looked up at me weakly and nodded. The vampire paused, pulsing and seething in its killing rage.
Stop or I'll waste him. Even you aren't that fast.
I had about 2.5 pounds of pressure on the 3-pound trigger. I felt her will intrude against my own, but this time I was ready. I knew what was coming. I cannot explain the mechanism of it, but her attack was thwarted. This time, my will was mine and mine alone.
Mom!
Julie called from the entrance. An ominous hum emanated from the lit flamethrower in her hands.
Your invitation has been revoked. Get the hell out of my house!
She depressed the trigger. The vampire was engulfed in a spray of pressurized napalm. The stream of jellified gasoline exploded in a wall of intense heat, setting the floor afire and shattering several of the antique mirrors under the assault. I grabbed Ray by the collar and pulled him away as burning fuel splashed in every direction. Trip appeared on the balcony above.
Ronzi!
He shouted as he leveled the grenade launcher at the inferno. He at least waited long enough for me to be out of the blast radius before launching a high-explosive round into the floor at the monster's feet. The concussion was horrendous. The priceless chandelier fell from its mounting and crashed to earth, flying into millions of separate shards. Susan's burning body was flung against the far wall, shattering the glass doors to the veranda. Julie kept up a constant spray of napalm. Even the mightiest queen of the undead could not regenerate under that onslaught. The vampire smashed through the glass. I picked up Abomination and fired a grenade after her. My aim was off, but it was close enough to shred the burning flesh from her bones. I heard Trip shouting,
"Backblast! Backblast!"
I looked up in time to see Holly steadying her RPG over her shoulder. Firing that with her back against a wall would probably be immediately fatal.
"Oh, yeah," she said. "Damn it."
She threw the rocket-propelled grenade aside and retrieved her rifle. And she had been so looking forward to blasting something with it. Julie followed her mother, keeping up the onslaught of fire and burning fuel. The ballroom was burning now, and it was spreading up the walls and toward the ceiling. The house was going up. She finally stopped, and the flamethrower's stream died off to a small flame. Her mother was on the burning veranda, a charred and curled skeleton, flesh turned to ash. The creature crumbled as it tried to move, revealing blackened and twisted bones. She slowly stood, ash falling away, new flesh and tissues already pulsing underneath.
"Won't you just die already?"
Julie screamed. She was crying. My heart went out to her. Her home was burning down, and her undead mother was intent on drinking her blood. It was a really crappy evening by any standard. Then something strange happened. One second, the room was burning, fire licking around us, scalding us with intense heat, and the next second, it just stopped. The flames were extinguished, leaving only smoking embers. The temperature dropped at least 70 degrees almost instantly, as if we had just stepped into a walk-in freezer. My breath came out in a cloud of ice vapor. The remaining mirrors fogged up and cracked.
"What the hell is happening?"
Holly asked quietly, her voice trembling. I did not know. But I took the opportunity to reload a fresh grenade into Abomination's underslung launcher. My fingers fumbled clumsily, suddenly nerve-deadened by the cold. I shivered, and my teeth began to clatter together. A horrible feeling of dread traveled down my spine.
"Who's that?"
Trip asked. His tone betrayed his fear. I looked up in time to see a second figure appear on the veranda. This one was a gaunt man, with greasily slicked back hair and a narrow, hatchet face. He was wearing a full-length trench coat. His bearing was ramrod straight. His movements were unnaturally sharp and crisp. The tall man paused beside the scorched vampire. He stood at parade rest. It was the lead vampire from my dream, Lord Machado's lieutenant. Susan's blackened form bowed before him. He placed one gloved hand on her head.
"You have failed me, Susan. I am most displeased."
His voice was deep and had a precise German or Austrian accent. I could still feel the old man's presence in the ballroom. The ghost surged with anger toward the new intruder.
"Forgive me, Jaeger,"
she rasped. Her vocal cords had been burned seconds before, and she could barely speak.
"I didn't kill them, but I have learned of the place. My husband told me."
"Excellent."
He patted Susan on the head, scattering ashes from her skull. Then he turned his attention on us. You are in luck that I do not have an invitation. Be warned. Do not trifle in our affairs, or it will be your death. The master vampire looked upwards as he heard something. The perimeter alarm sounded. Helicopter blades beat in the distance. Company was on the way. He glared at me in particular. If it isn't Birika and his oafish friend. I could feel the hate emanating from the old man toward the vampire. It was almost a physical thing. You are out of your league, Yudin. I am surprised at your resourcefulness. None of the others that have been used have been able to come back to this world. You ever surprise me. But in the end, you are nothing. We will see, Nazi bastard son of bitch. The hatchet-faced vampire smiled, showing us his razor teeth. You amuse me, old man. Your kind always has. Come, Susan. We have much work to do. He faded into the darkness and was gone. The temperature slowly began to climb to normal levels. Susan Shackelford was whole once again. She brushed back her hair, knocking the remaining ashes free. The beautiful vampire was savagely angry.
You will be mine again, honey. Just you wait. Don't call me honey. You're not really my mom. Whatever you have to tell yourself to keep the nightmares away, honey. I love you.
She slowly backed into the shadows, fading away until only her eyes were visible. She blinked, and they, too, were gone into the night. Chapter 20 I knelt at Ray Shackelford's side. He had been savagely bitten and torn open. I pressed my hands against his neck to try to staunch the flow of blood, but it just kept pouring out.
I'm sorry, he rasped.
Just relax. You're going to be okay, I lied. His pulse was very weak.
Gretchen!
I screamed.
Susan, she took it from my mind. I couldn't stop her.
He groaned in pain.
Dad.
Julie fell to her knees, the super-hot flamethrower clattering to the floor next to her.
Oh, honey, I'm so sorry.
He coughed and blood bubbled from his lips.
I never wanted to hurt anyone. I just loved her so much. I couldn't let her go.
It's okay, Dad,
she gasped, grabbing his hands. Tears cut a path down her soot-blackened face.
I didn't know. Vampire. That's why the spell failed.
He was growing weaker.
Forgive me. I forgive you,
she cried.
I forgive you. Just hang on.
Gretchen appeared. She pushed me aside and pressed a cloth against Ray's savage throat. She wiped away enough blood to get a good look, and then she immediately went to work with a small kit of primitive tools. I backed away so as not to disturb the healer in her work. Tripp and Holly were standing back, watching the veranda, weapons at the ready. The helicopters were louder now.
We have company, Holly said. Feds.
Listen, the place. Natchee Bottom.
Mississippi? I asked. Milo had warned us briefly about it during our trip to visit the elves.
Yes, deep down. Hidden. Talk to the Wendigo.
He closed his eyes. Gretchen looked up at Julie and shook her head slowly.
Julie,
I love you.
His voice was barely audible.
I'm so sorry.
I love you too, Dad,
she whispered. Only minutes before, she had been prepared to kill him. But now, at the moment of his incipient death, she had to confront her feelings for her father. My heart ached for her. The helicopters were overhead. Searchlights stabbed down onto the property as federal agents fast-roped onto the grounds. A loudspeaker boomed as directions were shouted at us.
Drop your weapons! Do not move!
An Apache hovered low, beating the air, causing the broken remains of the veranda doors to rock closed. The 30-millimeter chain gun was aimed directly at us. We had no choice but to comply. I removed Abomination and pushed it away, then unbuckled the pistol belt and set it aside as well. Trip and Holly did as they were told. Julie was still holding her father's hand.
Julie, toss your gun!
I did not know if the feds would just blast the whole house, but I didn't want to provoke them.
Hey, Julie, listen to me.
She snapped out of it and angrily slid her pistol away. Black-clad troopers were approaching rapidly, guns leveled at us, flashlights pointing into our eyes.
What do we do? Trip asked.
Julie did not answer. She just looked sullenly down at her dying father. I did not know what was going through her mind.
Do what they say.
I had a feeling it was about to get ugly. The feds hit the house hard and fast. Windows shattered as flashbang grenades were thrown in. Doors were smashed open with handheld battering rams or blown off their hinges with shotgun breaching rounds. The monster control agents swarmed over us, shouting orders and forcing us to the ground. I fared a bit better than the last time I had encountered them. The boot placed on my neck was not nearly as heavy as the last one.
"We have an injured man," shouted one of the troopers. "It's Shackelford. Send the medic."
Gretchen howled in pain as one of the feds booted her aside.
"Hey, she's a doctor!"
Tripp shouted. He pushed against the feds that were trying to handcuff him. The first blow landed directly behind his ear, sending him sprawling back to his knees. He was clubbed to the ground in a flurry of rifle butts, and then stomped and kicked into submission. Assholes. A trooper who must have been a medic dealt with Ray. From my position on the ground, I could make eye contact with Julie. She was sobbing, looking at her father's still form. Years of pent-up emotion all let free in a horrible moment of violence.
"Building secured," stated one of the troopers. "Opening out the perimeter."
The noise level died off as the helicopters banked hard and away, covering more area, searching for vampires. I knew that they weren't going to find anything.
"We have another hunter in the house. He's probably dead or injured,"
Julie shouted at the feds, thinking of the missing Grant.
"Lieutenant Medevac Shackelford out of here. Get this one up,"
ordered a familiar voice. I was pulled up so that I could look into the stern face of Special Agent Myers. His personal attack dog, Agent Franks, stood behind him. Once again, Myers was dressed in his cheap suit. The other agents were geared up in all of their body armor.
"Pitt, what's going on here?"
"Vampires. They came for Ray," I answered truthfully, as Ray's limp form was carried out on a stretcher to a waiting Black Hawk.
He did not look good, and if he was not already dead, I knew that he soon would be. If his injuries didn't kill him, standard operating procedure that I was well familiar with meant the feds would take care of him.
"Where is the place? Did you learn about the place?"
Myers shouted at me. I did not know if I should mention it.
I had been mistreated at their hands enough times that I had real doubts about how much I could trust them at all. On the other hand, somebody had to stop the cursed one, and they were probably better equipped to do it than us.
"Talk," he ordered. "This is serious business."
"I know, Myers.
Damn it, it's in..." "Owen, don't tell them,"
Julie shouted. One of the troopers kicked her in the ribs. She cried out in pain.
"Stop that!"
I shouted. Franks brushed past Myers and slugged me in the side of the face. It was brutally hard. My head snapped back on my neck, and I was only kept from falling by the feds that held my arms.
"Tell us where, Mr. Pitt,"
Myers shouted.
"We're at Condition Red. None of you have any civil rights at this moment, so we will beat it out of you if necessary. The clock is ticking."
Franks punched me in the stomach. My abdominal muscles seized up in agony, and I wheezed for air. The man could certainly throw a punch. I swear that he had to beat on sides of beef like Rocky or something to develop a punch like that. I did not know why Julie did not want me to tell them about Natchy Bottom, but if she said not to, I trusted her. I knew this was going to hurt.
"Kiss off, Myers. I ain't telling you shit,"
I gasped.
Wham!
That hit compressed my stomach back into my spine. He hit me hard enough to make my dog bleed. And I don't even own a dog.
"Myers, you were MHI once. You can't do this,"
Julie pleaded.
"Why not, Julie?" he retorted. "Don't you understand what is at stake here?"
"The fate of the world,"
she answered.
"Yes, we know."
"So just tell us where to go and we'll be waiting for him."
He sounded very reasonable. I couldn't breathe.
"Sanctuary,"
she answered. Myers scowled. Frank's dark features drew up in confusion. Obviously an emotion he didn't like, so he hit me again just to be on the safe side. I wheezed in agony. Franks pulled back and cracked his knuckles one-handed. At least I had succeeded in making his hand sore.
"What's sanctuary?"
"They cut deals with some monsters," Myers answered. "Sometimes they find something they decide isn't really bad, even though it's on the puff list. They let it go. They even hide them from us. Grant them sanctuary, if you will. Like this thing here."
He gestured rudely toward Gretchen.
"Her kind of fair game."
"If you hurt her, I swear I'll kill you," I told Myers. Franks raised an eyebrow, ready to make good on the organ donor sticker on my driver's license. Myers put one small hand on the other agent's thick arm. Franks looked disappointed.
"No need, Mr. Pitt. I'm no monster. She isn't any threat."
He sounded sincere.
"I'm just a man trying to serve my country. Right now, you people are standing in my way of doing that."
He addressed Julie.
"Listen, I'll give you my word. Whatever you have living at the place, we'll leave it alone. We're just after Lord Machado."
Julie appeared to think about it. She winced under the weight of the feds pushing down on her and put aside the pain of her new knowledge about her mother's fate and her father's apparent death. Finally she spoke, and when she did, she was utterly calm.
"I'll tell you everything I know, but you have to leave MHI alone. Get out of the compound. Let us do our jobs. You can have the place. You can be ready for the Cursed One. Give me your word that you'll leave the sanctuary alone and you're welcome to the rest."
I could see why she was the one that took care of the company's contract negotiations. "No," Myers stated flatly. Your gang of misfits is done as far as I'm concerned. Aiding and abetting a fugitive. Nope. MHI is finished. Once again, monster hunting is a government responsibility, just like it should be.
You bastard, she spat.
We didn't turn my dad over because we thought you had a leak to the cursed one. That's absurd, he replied, which was true enough. The bad guys did not need information from us or the feds to know about Ray, not when his own wife was working for the other team. Fat lot of good that knowledge did us now. Look, I don't like this at all. I'm not a violent person, but we don't have time for your games. He nodded toward his subordinate with obvious distaste. Agent Franks, do what you have to do. We need to know where the place is.
Yes, sir.
The dark man looked at me emotionlessly. It was going to be a long night. Just then, Meyer's radio crackled.
Delta Team, this is Bravo. There's a car approaching, high rate of speed. Should we fire on it? Over.
Negative. Intercept at the gate, he replied.
Expecting company? He asked Julie.
No. Just the vampire that ransacked my home and killed my dad, she stated flatly.
The radio again.
Sir, it appears to be some of the hunters from the MHI compound.
Who? Myers asked.
Earl Harbinger and a few others. He's out of the vehicle and approaching the entrance. Moving to intercept.
Arrest them,
Myers responded.
Be careful. Harbinger is extremely dangerous.
Julie made eye contact with me. She mouthed the words, get ready. I nodded slightly. I did not know what was coming, but I was not going to let her down. I was not cuffed, but I had a Fed on each arm. So far I had not resisted, and they were merely holding me up to be Frank's punching bag. There was another trooper by Julie, one by Gretchen, and as far as I could tell, three on Trip and Holly. All of them were well-trained, heavily armed, and looking for an excuse to shoot us. Everyone was startled as automatic gunfire erupted from the front of the house. Franks looked in that direction as his hand moved toward his holstered Glock. He did not see my bare foot sailing towards his crotch. I kicked him hard. Too bad he was wearing armor. I brought my foot down and used my leverage and brute strength to swing the two feds holding my arms into each other. They collided in an armored mass. I smashed an elbow into the first one's jaw and broke the second fed's nose with a left jab. They both went down. The room exploded into confusion. The agent kneeling on Julie screamed in pain and fell over. Franks recovered with a small grimace and charged me. The other feds went for their guns. We were about to get killed. The door exploded inward and two agents were hurled through, landing and rolling painfully across the floor. Harbinger came in fast, charging directly into the agents standing over Trip and Holly. He went swiftly into the path of their rising muzzles. He attacked, dodged between the guns, struck the agents down with his bare hands, batted aside a rifle, grasped the final fed by his web gear, and slung him back into the wall with a horrible crash. I had never seen a man move that quickly. Distracted by Harbinger's superhuman display, I did not see Frank's movement. He forced his palm into my face, pushing me off balance. He bladed off, protecting his right side, going for his pistol. I struggled forward, trying to reach his gun hand. Time slowed down. The pistol came up and out of the holster.
Stop! Stop!
Screamed Myers. Franks froze, his Glock held in a tight, low retention position. Finger on the trigger. Indexed directly at my sternum. His eyes were locked on mine. If I moved at all, I was dead. Julie was still lying on the floor, but had rolled far enough to reach the flamethrower. It was humming, pointed at Meyer's legs. The agent that she had knocked over had pressed his pistol into her back. Harbinger stood over the stunned forms of the other downed feds. The fed by Gretchen was holding his leg, where her totem stick had stabbed him. Unfortunately, he had raised his G-36, and it was pointed at Gretchen's head. I could not see most of the feds' expressions behind their black balaclavas, but I imagined that they were about as tense as I was. If one person twitched wrong, a whole bunch of us were going to get shot or immolated. It was the most screwed-up Mexican standoff I had ever seen. Another fed entered the room, hands held above his head, Sam Haven pushing close behind, with the muzzle of his pistol screwed into the back of the agent's neck, just under the helmet.
"Nobody move or I'll waste this punk!"
Sam shouted. He paused as he studied the complicated situation, before shrugging and spitting some tobacco juices.
"Oh, never mind. Y'all are ahead of me."
He sounded rather disappointed.
"Don't spit on the floor, you ape,"
Julie ordered. It may have been scorched and blasted with shrapnel, but it was still her house. Harbinger's hands were empty of weapons, but after the display of physical prowess I had just seen, nobody was in a hurry to mess with him. Five feds lay on the ground, moaning or whimpering. He shouted down the hallway he had entered from.
"Milo! How you doing?"
"Hurry up! There's like 100 feds coming this way, and they look pissed!"
"Myers, turn on your damn phone," Harbinger commanded. "Do it now!"
The fed complied. He slowly reached into the pocket of his suit, pulled out the phone, and turned it on. Immediately we all heard that annoying, "Take me out to the ball game." "I hate that ring," I said, as I looked over Frank's Glock.
"Me too,"
he agreed, not letting the gun waver at all.
"I shut it off when we landed. It's kind of distracting on a raid," Myers said defensively as he pushed the button to answer it.
"This is Agent Myers."
"Yes, I will hold for—"
The senior agent sounded surprised.
"Oh. Hello, sir. Sorry. I apologize. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But this is outside the regular chain of command."
We heard half of the conversation. Myers seemed remarkably collected, considering Julie had the flamethrower pointed at him. The agent pointing the rifle at Gretchen looked a little shaky. I hoped this did not take long.
"But, sir, but, we can, but—"
"Yes, sir. I understand."
We waited for the conversation to end.
"Understood. Goodbye, sir."
He refolded his phone and dropped it back into his pocket.
"Stand down!"
he shouted.
"Everybody stand down!"
The guns in the ballroom slowly began to lower. Sam pulled his SIG 220 out of the back of the agent's neck. Julie set the flamethrower down.
"Tell the guys outside that, too!"
Milo blurted from down the hall.
"There's a big black helicopter looking at me!"
Myers spoke into the radio.
"Stand down. All units stand down. That is an order."
Tense moments passed as everyone complied. Frank's was the last to do so. With the Glock still pointing at my heart, he told me simply,
"I'll get to kill you one of these days."
He slowly lowered the weapon and reholstered.
"Take a number," I replied.
"Well, Harbinger, I'm surprised,"
Myers said. He looked flustered and angry. He still reminded me of a professor, only now he looked like one who had just found out his tenure had been denied.
That's outside of the chain of command, but you know I'm not going to go against a cabinet-level appointee.
You heard him,
Harbinger stated shortly.
We have a truce. Y'all can get the hell out of here.
For now. As soon as I get orders from the director, he's going to be overridden, and then I'm going to arrest every single one of you for assaulting federal agents and aiding and abetting a fugitive.
I figure that will probably take more than 48 hours. So by then, either the world is going to be destroyed, or this is all a moot point.
Until then, you have your orders, Harbinger said coldly.
You can take the place. We clean up the local infestations. We tell you what we know. You leave us alone.
The senior agent appeared to mull that over. The idea seemed to leave a bad taste in his mouth.
Fine. For now, Myers said coldly.
We'll see about that in the long term, Earl. I moved to help Julie stand. She looked shaky. Her wound had reopened, but there was not too much blood. She pushed me away.
I'm okay, she said.
Bull, I stated. Let me help you. I took her by the arm.
All units, we're clear. Hold your fire. Prepare to pull out,
Myers ordered into the radio. The feds attended to their injured. The five men that Harbinger had attacked were all stirring, though some looked to be nursing broken bones.
You better not have seriously hurt any of my men, he told Harbinger. I don't care how important some people think you are, Earl. I'll personally make sure your special status is revoked, and I'll see to it you rot in prison forever.
I didn't hurt them too bad, Harbinger said simply.
He spread his hands innocently, though he could not mask his predatory confidence. Somehow he had moved, weaponless, through a crowd of ready and armed men and beaten down any of them that stood in his way.
They shouldn't have tried to stop me.
I remembered how Harbinger had saved me from Darnay. At the time I had assumed that it had just been some sort of pro-monster-hunting trick. But after watching him dispatch the feds with relative ease, I knew that something else was going on.
Just what the hell is he?
I said softly into Julie's ear. Somehow Harbinger heard me from across the room. He winked.
It's a long story, she replied brusquely. Earl Grant's missing. Dad's dead.
No.
Harbinger said. His face fell.
Oh, hell.
My men have not reported any other hunters on the premises, Myers said. They probably took your man.
Milo!
Harbinger shouted.
I'm not getting Grant's signal on GPS. It's either broke or disabled. He was wearing his armor, right?
Yes, he was on guard duty,
she shouted back down the hall.
Sorry, Julie. I've got nothing.
He will be avenged,
Sam told her. The big cowboy was solemn.
I promise.
If it's any consolation, I'm sorry. But we're wasting time, Myers stated. I need a place, and I need it now. You have my word. Whatever thing you have hiding out there, we won't bother it.
Deal,
Harbinger said.
Julie?
Somewhere inside Natchee Bottom, Mississippi,
she told the room after an instant of hesitation. She would have to grieve later.
You know about it?
Yes, we know it, the senior agent replied. Bad place.
Where, though? That's a lot of swamp to cover.
Dad said that it was hidden. You need to talk to the Wendigo to find out where.
Impossible,
Myers said. Those are just Indian fairy tales.
Nope,
Harbinger said. The bottoms belong to him. We have an understanding.
Fine, we'll handle it. You and your thugs can clean up the local undead outbreaks,
Myers snapped.
We'll set up on the place and blow the cursed one to kingdom come.
One problem, Julie said. The Wendigo isn't going to talk to you. You're going to be wandering around the woods for weeks. You know what the bottoms are like. The rules don't apply there.
Let me guess, Myers said.
He exhaled slowly, apparently trying to control his anger.
This thing will talk to you people, though.
He'll only talk to me, Harbinger said, before adding with a note of barely concealed disgust,
"Looks like we're going with you."
Myers cursed. The man had a remarkable gift for creative profanity.
"Looks like we get to work together,"
I told Franks cheerfully. The silent brute just nodded as he patted his Glock, doubtlessly contemplating the moment he would finally get to use it on me.
"This is it," I said. "We know where the cursed one is going to be. We finish this tomorrow, one way or the other."
"About time," Sam said. "Grant was one of us. That slimy bastard is gonna pay."
The big cowboy kicked at the gravel.
"Yeah,"
Milo added, with what was for him unusual somberness. He wore his night vision monocular and scanned back and forth across the property. The three of us were standing in the darkened driveway of the Shackelford ancestral home near the vehicles. We were waiting for the others. Gretchen was applying some first aid to Trip after the little bit of stick time he had received. Holly was grabbing some gear. Harbinger and Julie were standing about 100 yards away, talking quietly amongst themselves. Apparently, Julie had a few things that she needed to speak with him about privately. The feds had left, quite a bit worse for wear after the beating that some of them had received from Harbinger.
"What do you think they did with him?"
I asked. I did not like the way that we were talking about our companion as if he were already dead, but I could not realistically see much hope for the alternative.
"The old man's journal said that they needed to sacrifice 100 to use their device," Milo said. "I'm guessing that poor Grant is going to get himself sacrificed."
"Sucky way to die," Sam agreed.
"Do they need to keep him alive until the full moon? There's a possibility he could be alive still."
"Maybe," Milo said. "We can hope."
He sounded doubtful. Most of the seasoned hunter's missions involved search and destroy, rather than rescue. Having eavesdropped on Grant's contrition earlier made him somehow more human now, and made his being taken that much more difficult to stomach. But a tiny, ugly part of me hated him even more now, because I could see that Julie was taking his disappearance hard, and I found myself somehow jealous of someone who was probably already dead. We sat in silence for a few moments. In the distance, I could see that Julie and Harbinger were arguing. She looked rather angry and animated as the senior hunter tried to explain something.
"What do you think they're fighting about?" I asked.
"I'm guessing she wants to know if Earl knew that Susan was a vampire," Milo answered, as he looked upward through the night vision. "I can never get over how many stars you can see through one of these things."
"Did he know?"
"Beats me," Sam answered. "We had our suspicions, of course. We had never found her body, and they had been hunting a vampire. I mean, I guess we all kind of thought about it, but none of us wanted to think it was a real possibility. You gotta understand, we loved Susan. The idea of having any of us turn to the other side, well, that just ain't no good."
"I've got a chainsaw with my name on it in the workshop," Milo told us happily. "If I'm ever killed by undead, I want you guys to chop me up with it. It's a good chainsaw."
"I reckon it is, Milo,"
I would be honored to chop your head off, Sam said. I worked with some interesting folks.
The lights in the house were extinguished. Trip, Holly, and Gretchen joined us a moment later. Since we had blown holes in the ballroom, and the feds had kicked in all of the doors and many of the windows, we could not even lock up anything other than the vault. I just hoped that nobody came here and looted the place while we were gone. Trip was limping and did not look very good.
Now I know how Rodney King felt, he said through swollen gums. One eye was matted shut, and Gretchen had smeared him with some sort of foul-smelling cream.
Yeah, but you ain't gonna get no million-dollar settlement to blow on hookers and crack like he did,
Sam said wryly.
We're just waiting for the boss and we can get out of here. We got us some monsters to kill.
Julie and Harbinger continued fighting for another minute, before finally coming to some sort of terms. He hugged her as she sobbed on his shoulder.
She's had a tough night, Milo said simply. Estranged father dead, boyfriend missing, mother revealed to be undead. Milo Anderson was a master of understatement. None of us disagreed.
I've got a question, Trip asked. How come Grant didn't sound the alarm? I woke up when I heard Owen shouting.
Probably snuck up on him, I lied.
In truth, I had a pretty good idea of what had happened. Probably something similar to what Susan had tried on me, only Grant had probably not realized what was going on until it was too late.
Holly knew the truth. Vampires can be seductive. You saw what she was wearing. She probably floated in as mist, put on some of Julie's things, and bit Grant when he thought he was going to get lucky. Then she tried the same thing on Z here.
She pointed at me.
So, did you score with your friend's dead mom?
It sounds gross when you put it that way. It didn't do me too much good to lie at that point. I got to second base before I realized she wasn't breathing. I stammered with no small amount of embarrassment.
Hey, I thought she was Julie.
And then I felt really stupid for saying that. Luckily, she was still standing far enough away to have not heard.
Way to go, big guy.
Sam punched me in the shoulder.
If you'd been a little dumber, you could have put a whole new meaning to staking vampires.
That's horrible,
Trip said, as he pressed a bag of ice against the side of his head.
Whatever. She would have bit you next, Holly said. Probably not. I would have sounded the alarm, he answered.
Sure you would have, church boy.
No, really, I've never...
He caught himself.
Never mind. No way.
Holly sounded stunned.
Are you saying... No way. You're, what, 27?
Trip looked very uncomfortable.
Saving it for marriage?
Milo interjected, looking alien with his massive beard poking out from under his night vision.
Good for you, Trip.
At least he had the Mormon contingent's approval.
I didn't know you Rastafarians did that kind of thing, Sam said. I figured you all partied.
Baptist,
Trip said quickly.
Oh, I just figured with the funky hair and whatnot, you should shave that thing then. You'd look good.
Sam spat into the gravel. I made a mental note never to listen to the fashion advice of a man with a mullet and a puffy trucker hat.
Yeah, you would look like Shaft,
I added helpfully.
Not the old one, the new one. Chicks dig that on a black dude. Be sure to get yourself laid then, kid,
Sam told him with great confidence.
But wait, it's a personal choice, damn it,
Trip sputtered.
Okay, guys, here's the plan.
Thankfully, Harbinger interrupted. He lit a cigarette as he approached. It was back to business. Julie looked sad, but resolute and determined. The director just looked angry.
Back to base. Gear up. We will form an assault element. We're going to meet the feds in Natchez Bottom in the morning. Milo, load up everything you can think of. Julie, Sam, you two contact every other team in the country. Have them drop whatever they're working on and get back here now. Our team hits the bottoms, everybody else hits the local outbreaks. He pointed at me. Newbie squad, take a car. Take Gretchen back to her people.
I had almost forgotten about the small woman. She was so quiet, and cloaked in her shapeless robes, she nearly disappeared in the shadows. Harbinger bowed toward her in a sign of sincere respect and said something in her language. It sounded like gurgles and clicks to me. She replied, gravelly and deep.
"Thank you, Gretchen. You bring great honor to your clan," he said, and turned back to me. "Get her home. She isn't a warrior, but she performed like one tonight. MHI will always be in her clan's debt. There's a little road just north of the compound. Follow it. She'll show you the way. Don't get jumpy if they get weird on you. Remember, they're our friends."
The group dispersed to their tasks. I grabbed Julie by the arm.
"Wait."
I didn't know what to say, but I needed to say something. She turned around, great dark circles under her eyes.
"What? What is it, Owen?"
"I'm sorry about your parents, and I'm sorry about Grant." She raised her hand and cut me off.
"No. No, you're not."
"No, I stammered.
"You wanted Grant dead, didn't you?"
she snapped.
"Well, looks like you got your wish."
She spun and walked away. The compound was not that far away from the Shackelford home. We took Grant's car. The interior was immaculate, and the XM stations were all pre-programmed for classical music. At least I could hear again. Gretchen's purple goo had worked well. Tripp and Holly were in the back seat, and Gretchen rode up front. I passed the lane leading to the compound and slowed down as Gretchen pointed out a tiny path cloaked in trees and moss. The narrow road was so overgrown with vegetation that the headlights only cut a small swath before us.
"This is it?"
I asked her. She nodded, a movement barely perceptible beneath her robes. It was just after 3 a.m., but she was still wearing her mirrored shades. The Mercedes bumped through the foliage, and the undercarriage scraped as we dipped into the deep ruts. I rolled down the window. The chirping of insects was rhythmic and strong. A trio of cow skulls had been tied around a tree with leather cord. I knew that it was a sign that we were on Skippy's property.
"I love what you've done with the place."
Gretchen clicked approvingly. We continued down the lane, deeper and deeper into the dark woods. Though the compound was only a few miles away, we seemed totally isolated from the world. The trees here were tall, and the forest primeval. Glowing eyes reflected back at us as raccoons scurried away.
"This is kind of creepy," Tripp said.
"It isn't so bad," I answered.
Then something huge sprinted across the road through the headlights. It was massive and covered in black fur, and it was gone in an instant.
"What the hell was that?"
I shouted as I stomped on the brakes. The Mercedes halted on the packed dirt, leaving us in a cloud of red dust. I rolled up the window without thinking.
"Deer?"
asked Holly.
"That was no damn deer," I said.
It had looked more like a scurvy bear crossed with a lion. Maybe I had not been getting enough sleep. Gretchen said something unintelligible and made shooing motions for me to continue onward. Apparently, whatever the animal had been, it was of no serious concern to her. Flickering lights appeared in the distance. Campfires. Big ones. We slowly rolled forward until we saw the structures of a tiny community. Perhaps village would be the best word. The little houses were clustered tightly together into a rough semicircle. Surprisingly enough, the homes looked nice and well cared for.